My name is Ed Goldberg. Welcome to Author Author, an occasional series of conversations with authors touring through Portland or whom I have reached by phone. My name is Ed Goldberg, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Christine Finlayson. Christine, welcome to All Classical.
Thank you, Ed. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. Title of your book is Tip of a Bone, and it's published by Adventure Press, and your name is spelled F-I-N-L-A-Y-S-O-N, Christine Finlayson. This is a Oregon book in the sense that it takes place mostly on the Oregon coast, around Newport, which is one of my favorite places on the Oregon coast, and I just love anything about Newport. So this book, I was inclined to like it anyway, just because it's about Newport. Why Newport?
The Oregon coast has always been a special place for me and for my family, and we spent many times visiting there. I love Newport, especially because it's a vibrant community. It's got a more than 100-year history of commercial fishing. There's scientific research. There's tourism and all these things. And it's also a place that I believe the year-round population is about 10,000, but I've heard that in the summertime it can swell to maybe 100,000 people. And so I thought it was a perfect spot to have some conflict, which you always need for a mystery novel.
That's right. A story without conflict is what? I don't know, bland?
Bland.
My love for Newport is a few years old. I've been living in Oregon 22 years, and when I discovered Newport, when we discovered Newport, it just, everything clicked. Everything is nice about the place, and there is great seafood restaurants in Newport, which, of course, is very important to me. But how much, let's see, when you decided to set a mystery in Newport, did you spend a lot of time there going around and checking out sites and checking out places and figuring out what was going on with local people? How did you go about researching this book?
Well, I probably took 13 to 14 trips out there, and I would stay for several days at a time. Some of that was valid research. I wanted it to be very a place-based book, and so I needed to make sure I was talking about the right places and had them correct. I did make my main character, Maya Rivers, new to town. So she didn't have to know everything in the way that a local person would know it. She was experiencing it sort of through an outsider's eyes. So that made it a little bit easier to do the accuracy piece. And I did have someone from Newport read through it when it was complete. And she called me on a few things that she said, you know, we just wouldn't refer to it that way here or things like that.
Very important.
So, yes.
Yeah, if you get the local color wrong, you'll always get a letter from somebody saying, "Dear sir or madam, I really liked your book. However..."
Right.
Maya Rivers she's just survived an unhappy breakup. And why does she go to Newport? Well, her brother is there. Her brother Harley. Is that the thing that draws her there?
I think she's just fleeing. She's fleeing a bad situation and searching for peace. And she thinks she's going to find this in a coastal community. She's sort of going to go there and lick her wounds. And she wants to reconnect with her brother, who she hasn't seen in a number of years. So she's going there expecting that everything is going to be this peaceful reunion.
Yeah, but not.
But yeah, not. But
not. Now, Harley is, he's involved with a group called the Coast Defenders.
Right.
And anybody in Oregon knows that there are places like downtown Portland where you could hardly throw a rock without hitting somebody that's involved in a group. Right. And the Oregon coast was sacred for many years, but like any place else that's nice, people want to live there. And if people want to live there, there's going to be people that have no problem despoiling the beauty of a natural environment just to put up a bunch of ticky-tacky condos. That's sort of what's happening here. Tell us a little bit about the setup for this and why the Coast Defenders exist.
Well, the Coast Defenders is an imaginary group, but I sort of pictured that the coast could have a group like that. One of the things, as I go back to the Oregon coast and the Newport area in particular, year after year, is I notice, you know, there are small coffee shops or restaurants or tiny, you know, mom and pop shops that I've been going to for years, and they're starting to close or they're starting to disappear, and chain stores are appearing in their place. There's also been some major housing developments built down there. So areas where I used to go and hike in the forest or go along the beach, and now instead of this, you know, amazing beach view is miles down as far as you can see, you actually are looking at houses. And so I felt a real sense of loss. You know, I don't live there. I'm just experiencing it as a visitor, but I felt a real sense of loss. And so part of the story behind this book is sort of honoring that. You know, I wanted to say don't change, but things do change. And it's sort of looking at that piece of development that you can't stop mm-hmm. in a beautiful area.
Yeah, I spoke to somebody recently who came back from Cancun and said she had no idea what Cancun was like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But now there's miles, literally it must be 30 miles of beachfront stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hotels, condos, stores, boutiques, up and down the coast. And the only people that really can't go there are the local people.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they're actually working in those places, they can't get in.
Right, right.
Can't even go to their own beach.
Right.
So I hope that doesn't happen here. But that's what the Coast Defenders allegedly is all about.
Right.
There's a woman named Sarah Blessing. I think we meet her really early in the book.
Mm-hmm.
She is a Coast Defender.
Yes.
And she makes a discovery. Now, the title of the book is Tip of the Bone, so that mm-hmm. kind of tips it a little bit. But right. Tell us about Sarah and what she finds.
Well, she heads out in the forest one night. She's been to this spot before and found a bone, and she's heading back in the hopes of finding more bones that she could use as evidence.
Evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she thinks something nasty is going on.
She thinks something nasty is going on, yes.
Yeah, she has suspicions?
She has some suspicions. I don't know if I want to reveal too much about the plot, but she's very determined that she's going to get this evidence and use it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When Maya starts talking to Harley, discovers mm-hmm. what he's been doing,
mm-hmm.
She's... I don't know, attracted and repelled at the same time. She thinks
mm-hmm.
that what he's doing might be a good thing, but she's worried about him because she mm-hmm. thinks he might be a little too avid,
mm-hmm.
a little, maybe willing to take too many chances. Yes?
Mm-hmm. She definitely, I think she's, part of her, as you said, is attracted to that because she's a fairly, I don't know if it's cautious person is the right word, but she's sort of not... She's buried that part of herself that's more adventurous. And so I think she envies her brother for the adventure that he's involved in, but she's very fearful that he's going to end up in jail, and he's sort of the last of her family that she is connected to, and she's very, very worried about him.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of nefarious things go on, including
mm-hmm.
fires and including... damage, what do you call it, vandalism of
mm-hmm.
certain, and everybody's trying to pin this on the Coast Defenders,
right.
and she's worried that he might be caught up in that kind of a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it gets worse when he disappears.
Right.
Yeah, so what does Maya start to do? What goes on in her mind at this point?
Well, she thinks that her... you know, her only hope of sort of saving her family is to prove that her brother is innocent, because he ends up being accused of some crimes, and she's, you know, she wants to protect him and sort of make sure that her family is worth saving.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Now, tell us about the Coast Defenders. They're an interesting group. There's Tomas, am I saying that correctly?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's more or less the leader of a group that doesn't really have a leader.
Right.
Yeah. And there's Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick is, there's a little tension between Nick and Tomas. Nick may be thinking that he should be the leader of the group rather
mm-hmm.
than Tomas, and
mm-hmm.
Tomas is not having any of that. But there's also a little goth girl named Kelsey
mm-hmm.
that I found vastly amusing.
Uh-huh.
Goths are one of those people we can still make fun of without feeling too much guilt.
But, right.
Yeah. What's going on with Tomas and Nick and Kelsey when Maya falls into this thing? It's like a hornet's nest in a way.
Mm-hmm. I think the group is sort of fighting for their survival, too, because they've been blamed for this arson fire and this fishing boat exploding in the harbor. And there's been some rumor that the FBI is investigating this and may come to town. And And so they're all sort of fighting for their own survival, and they think Maya is just stirring the pot and they don't want to have anything to do with her. And she, in turn, thinks they must be hiding something because they won't talk with her about it.
She's asked questions which seem reasonable, especially since she wants to find her brother who has gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, I guess, stonewalling is the right word for that. Although Nick tries, I mean, it seems as though he cares about her and he may be wanting to help her.
Mm-hmm.
And Tomas, on the other hand, rejects everything that she does and is actively nasty to her.
Mm-hmm.
And Kelsey, who thinks that she's Nick's girlfriend, is thinking that that Maya's trying to horn in on Nick, yeah?
Right. So,
this just gets worse and worse. Yeah?
It's quite the triangle.
Yeah. What? This is really interesting. For a woman who's basically damaged and cautious, Maya makes an amazing decision. What does she decide to do?
Do you mean when she decides to investigate this herself and put on her sleuthing hat?
Exactly, yeah.
I think she's been searching ever since her breakup for some kind of meaning in her life, and she cares very strongly for her brother, and she feels she's very loyal to him, and she feels that, you know, there's nobody else who's going to pick this up and figure out what happened. And so I think she feels compelled to do so. I like to write stories about people who are sort of ordinary, but they're thrown into extraordinary circumstances and they have to see what they're made of. And so I think of this as that kind of a story.
You're
kind
in
of a
Hitchcock
story.
Land.
Right.
Hitchcock's whole career is based on that, taking somebody who has no idea what's going on. The man who knew too much, he didn't know anything.
Right.
And then twisting them so far out of their comfort zone that it brings out resources of them they didn't know they had.
I hadn't thought about it as Hitchcock, but yes, you're right. You're sort of there in the cabin and then the birds arrive. And
or you're you wake up in the middle of a cornfield in a $1,000 suit and suddenly a crop duster comes after you.
Right.
I want to remind our listeners that I'm speaking with Christine Finlayson. Christine has written a book entitled Tip of a Bone, published by Adventure Press. There's a young woman named Allison.
Mm-hmm.
Allison, well, okay, let me back up one bit. Maya has to have some money. She needs some money, right? So she begins to work at a seafood restaurant called the Clam Strip.
Right.
Yeah. And Allison is also a server at the Clam Strip. But she's also Harley's girlfriend.
Right.
So the two of them kind of get together, but the boss at the Clam Strip is such a creep, and he's such a nasty guy, that they can't really talk at work. So they develop a relationship outside. Do you want to talk about their relationship and how it develops?
I think they are friends, but it's still a tentative friendship. Maya's relatively new to town, and she's trying to reconnect with their brother, and there's probably some element of envy there that Allison knows Harley so well, that she's had all these years, you know, with him that Maya hasn't had. So there's a little bit of tension between the two of them. And at the point where Allison says, you know, you're on your own, you figure this out. I'm tired of dealing with this, then Maya really feels very alone in this new town.
Yeah, they kind of don't trust each other as much as they would like to. There's something between them that they don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right? It's like almost an invisible curtain between them.
Right.
And Allison lives far enough out of town. She lives in Toledo, right?
Mm-hmm. Toledo,
yeah, she lives far enough out of town, so it's just about annoying to have to go out to see her all the time. But Maya has no trouble doing that, because the more that she gets involved in Harley's disappearance, the more that she needs from Allison.
Right. I was just thinking about that road out to Toledo. It was too good of a road to pass up. Bay Road. It's extremely winding, and if you drive it at night, it can be very spooky and very terrifying in a way, because there's no shoulder and you know, this may be a 6-inch shoulder, and if you take the curve wrong, you end up in the river.
Yeah, you know, somebody, maybe it was Elmore Leonard, said you should never start a book by talking about the weather.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote a book set on the Oregon coast, and the very first thing I do is have somebody driving on 101
mm-hmm.
in the midst of a hideous rainstorm mm-hmm. in the winter, mm-hmm. and there's no lights.
Right.
The road is slippery.
Mm-hmm.
There's no shoulders. I mean, if you go off, you go off, and
right.
you know, you fall 60 feet into the drink, so...
Right.
The Oregon coast is a pretty scary place.
I don't think you could start a book on the coast without having weather in the first chapter, because it just wouldn't be the Oregon coast.
That's right. Yeah. There's a reason you set books
right.
there. Yeah. When Maya decides to go incognito,
mm-hmm.
one of the things she does is rent a car. I really love mm-hmm. this car. Tell us about the Pink Beast.
Oh, the Pink Beast is a Buick Skylark, circa 1970s, and someone has hand-painted it, which she describes as having I love bubblegum flavor sort of color on the outside. And she's a little appalled by this because she's going to go undercover, and it's not a low-profile car, but I think she also grows to sort of love the Pink Beast, and her Corolla that she starts off with was sort of a beater anyway, so she's glad to have something that drives.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are various terrifying things that happen to her.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody tries to drive her off the road.
Mm-hmm.
She starts getting notices, little warning messages under her windshield wiper.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on in her mind here? How is she dealing with these increasing threats? And you do crank mm-hmm. them up mm-hmm. through the course of the book.
Mm-hmm. I think she, you know, she doesn't maybe realize how much danger she's really in. It was interesting in writing this book because the point of view is very close in that the reader's supposed to be inside her head, but she's also a relatively young character. And so it's not like she's seen things through, you know, the wisdom of looking back in life and saying, I need to be terrified. I'm, you know, it's a personal threat. It almost just makes her more determined to succeed at what she set out to do.
Yeah. But again, she can't be comfortable doing it. She thinks it's wrong for so many different ways, including the fact that it's alienated Allison from her for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So when she does this, she's taking an enormous chance. Now, mm-hmm. I was wondering, would you be capable of doing a thing like that? You know, we all have a fantasy life through our creations
mm-hmm.
in these books.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you could do a thing like that if pressed?
You know, if it was in the right situation, I probably could pull that out of myself. But I haven't been, you know, I haven't been tested in that way yet, so it's hard to say. But I do think as authors, we like to make our characters a little bit larger than life.
Torment them. We love to
torment them, make them miserable, and then see what they do and how they respond. And, you know, it wouldn't be that exciting of a mystery story if something happened to her and she went to the police and they said, we'll take care of it, thank you, and she went on with her life without another thought. It wouldn't be much of a story.
Yeah, like normal people do.
Right, right.
Not people in mystery novels.
Right, right. Yeah. People in mystery novels have to go out there and do some sleuthing.
Well, you know, I'm wondering whether I'm going to be walking too heavily on the plot here. So let me ask you a question about process.
Mm-hmm.
First, why did you decide to write a mystery novel? I mean, there's so many things you could have written.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from historical romances to who knows what.
Mm-hmm.
What made you sit down one day and say, I know, I'm going to write a mystery novel?
Yeah. Well, I've been a mystery reader for a number of years, you know, starting with really early, you know, Nancy Drew, and my mom is a huge mystery reader, so I inherit many of her books that she's done with. So I've read everything from cozies to, you know, spy thrillers sort of in the genre. And so I knew when I sat down to write, I knew I wanted it to be a mystery. Although I'm realizing now my tastes are changing a little bit within mystery, that I'm veering more towards mystery suspense in both my reading and my writing, sort of away from the whodunit.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is not a particularly gory book, but there is violence in it. Mm-hmm. Do you have any trouble writing violence? The two things that most writers have problem with are sex scenes mm-hmm. and violence scenes, mm-hmm. oddly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's your feeling about that?
I think it's a little uncomfortable. You know, you have to write it, and then you have to go a step beyond what makes you comfortable. You have to get uncomfortable while you're writing it. I can tolerate a certain amount of violence in my reading, but there are definitely authors that I love their books, but I will skim right through those scenes or even skip pages, and it's sort of like I don't need to see the whole violent scene. I just want to know what happens.
So you read about half of a Chelsea Kane book then?
I love Chelsea Kane, but yes, I do skip over the extremely violent parts of it.
Yeah. The first time I read one of her her latest books featuring the female serial killer.
Right.
I never really quite looked at her the same way, you know. Mm-hmm. And her husband he told me the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
He said the first time he read the first draft of the book, he kind of looked at her and said,
Yeah, I linger over the parts where she has a character, the mom character, I think, Bliss, and and Susan. I linger over those parts and speed through the violent ones.
The violence, yes. You're able to get through it with a certain amount of equanimity. You can handle it. What mm-hmm. about the sex scenes? Sex scenes have always been uncomfortable for me because I don't really know how far to go.
Right, right. You know, in retrospect, there are two brief sex scenes in there. And in retrospect, I sort of wish that I had taken them out, because I've had a lot of people ask me if this book is suitable for their 10-year-old or their 12-year-old. And for the most part, I mean, it's not real violent, as you said, but that's the part that I always would want to warn parents about. So, and it does knock you out of contention for some mystery awards, actually.
You mean for like a YA mystery award or something?
No,
like?
There was something I saw come across my email recently that said, you know, it was an Agatha Christie award, I think, for The Malice Domestic. And it could not have a sex scene.
Well, those are cozies. So, yeah.
For
those of you who don't know what cozy is, it's where the vicar or the woman who runs the tea shop or, you know, it is the amateur detective. Mm-hmm. And it's all very sweet, and it's all, you don't get to see any of the violence that happens off stage.
Right.
And everybody's brought into the library so that the detective can, tell everybody who the killer is. And,
right.
Yeah, it's all very Agatha Christie.
Right, that, right.
Yeah.
This is not that book.
this is not that book. Yeah. Well, My contention, and this is probably way too cynical, is mm-hmm. that if you're a kid in middle school, you know enough about sex to read a book like this. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, you hear it every day,
right?
In middle school.
It is a little ironic given what's on TV and everything that. But I feel like I should mention it to parents at the very least.
Yeah. There's a confrontation at the end in mm-hmm. this book, as it must. Mm-hmm. There is a confrontation where finally Maya figures out what's going on
mm-hmm.
and realizes that one of the characters in the book has been deceiving everyone
mm-hmm.
and that things may be even worse than she thinks they are.
Mm-hmm.
When you created this book,
mm-hmm.
did you map it out? What was everything outline? Or, yeah. And did you realize where the arc of the story is going, or did the ending or anything in the middle surprise you?
This book took a number of years to write, and it was my first novel, so it was a learning experience. I did not outline it, and I ended up throwing away quite a lot of scenes. I probably wrote as many scenes as ended up in the book that went into the trash. But
never throw anything away.
I could use it for something.
Yeah.
And I think I had a general idea of where the ending was heading, but the actual ending surprised me. And I actually rewrote it during the editing process of working with Adventure Publications. I rewrote it a couple of times, so it even changed in the very, very end.
Yeah, and you need to have red herrings.
Mm-hmm.
The more red herrings in a book, the better I like it. I like them to try to fool me so I have no idea which way is up. And you've managed to do pretty well with this book for a
mm-hmm.
first book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I read a lot of mysteries.
It's amazing how much you absorb just in terms of plotting mm-hmm. and character development. Mm-hmm. Also, your dialogue is pretty good. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of first writers write stilted dialogue, but mm-hmm. your people talk like people talk.
Mm-hmm. I read the book aloud many times, and in scenes that were giving me trouble, I would sit there and read it aloud to make sure that the dialogue sounded genuine.
Do you eavesdrop on conversations?
I do.
I don't know a writer that doesn't.
Right.
Because then you really hear what people talk about.
There are some gems out there. Yes. Characters you can come up with and dialogue that you can use.
Okay. Yes. So at the end of the book, Maya says she really likes Newport and it seems like home to her.
Mm-hmm.
And while everything doesn't get resolved wonderfully, everything mm-hmm. gets resolved, mm-hmm. at least in this particular case.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the next question is, will we be seeing Maya again, and will we have another mystery set in Newport?
Those are good questions. I hadn't anticipated writing a sequel, but I have had some readers say to me, but you left everything unresolved. So I think it's interesting that, you know, some people think it was resolved and some people wanted to know exactly what was going to happen next. I left it somewhere in the middle. I am working on a second book right now. It's set in Portland, and it's mystery suspense, so it's not a sequel. It's an entirely new set of characters, and like I said, I like to write about the ordinary people and the extraordinary circumstances, and so I worry that if you have an ordinary person and, you know, people keep dropping like flies around them, it starts to seem a little bit like a farce.
Yes.
So, but I would be open to the idea of returning to Maya, and I definitely would be open to the idea of writing another book set in Newport or elsewhere on the coast.
Yeah, yeah. With Maya, or, you know, you don't know yet.
My second book?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Another Newport book.
I might pick another person, like I said.
Because she's got skills now.
Yeah, maybe she would be. Yes, she does. And I would like to see her sort of develop into a stronger character over time, too.
Yeah.
So, you
always wind up falling in love a little bit with your characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to let them go.
It is hard to let them go. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Well, whenever the next book comes out, I hope you'll consider coming and talking to us again.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Oh, let me ask you, where can you find this book?
Well, locally, they have it at Powell's. They have it at Bob's Beach Books on the coast. It's on online locations. I have it at Broadway Books. I have on my website, I have a list of all the bookstores that I've been in communication with that I know have several copies. And you can also go to indiebound.org to look and see if your local bookstore has it.
And what's your website?
My website is christinefinlayson.com.
And again, that's Finlayson, Christine
yes.
Finlayson.
Yes.
Well, Christine, thank you very much for coming to All Classical. It's been a pleasure to speak with you, and I hope to talk to you again.
Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Author, Author, produced at the studios of All Classical KQAC-FM in Portland. My name is Ed Goldberg. You can find these programs at our website, allclassical.org/author. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back soon.